The final edition radio hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Welcome to the final edition radio hour, Satire with Teeth. I'm Jeff Chrysler. Even though Tony Hendra is still fighting off the alien invasion in a valiant attempt to prevent this bomb from killing us all, you'll still hear his voice. We've got a special interview, a real, genuine, no-faking-it interview with Larry Gatlin, author of the new book Conversations with Carlin. Tony Hendra, who knows a thing or two about his longtime collaborator George Carlin, talks some pretty good shop with Larry while I act like I know what's going on. We'll also try to understand legal weed, hang out with the new Republicans, go inside the pitch meeting for the Oscar-nominated Gravity, learn new, not yet proven untrue facts about President Obama, and preview Michelle Bachmann's new musical, Cat on a Hot Tin Streetcar Named Oh Geez. This is the final edition radio hour!
Now that many accusations about President Obama have been debunked, here are some new facts about him that have not yet been disproven. New fact number one. Although he was born in the United States, Barack Obama was born 200 years in the future. So even though he meets the residency requirement to be president, he is still 239 years too young for the job.
Coming soon to Broadway, it's Tea Party sensation Michelle Bachmann in an amazing synthesis of two of Tennessee Williams' most unforgettable heroines. Michelle Bachmann is bat crap crazy Blanche DuBois.
Is there something wrong with me? Oh boy, you betcha.
And she's Maggie the Cat, a desperate woman married to a closeted gay man.
I'm not living with you, Marcus. We occupy the same cage, that's all. I think it's Obama's internment camp, don't you know?
In the unforgettable Cat on a Hot Tin Streetcar Named Desire, Michelle infuses this dual role with her own complicated relationship with the truth.
The truth. Everyone keeps hollering about the truth. Well, the truth is as dirty as lies. You know, I wish someone would do an exposé on that.
When spoken in front of news cameras, her words may be lies, but when spoken on the stage, they become magic.
Yes, magic. I do misrepresent things. I don't tell truths. I tell what ought to be the truth. Have I mentioned that Obamacare is literally killing our seniors?
Featuring Marcus Bachmann as Brick.
So tell me, sweetie, what is the victory of a cat on a hot tin streetcar?
Just fooling herself, I suppose, long as she can. Maybe it's time for us to get another foster child, do you think?
And introducing Barack Obama as the cruel and brutal Stanley Kowalski.
The trouble with Dame Michelle was that she couldn't put on her act anymore, because they got wised up. And as the time went by, she became the town character, regarded not just as different, but downright loco and nuts.
So don't miss the lies.
I know I fib a good deal. After all, a woman's charm is 50% illusion.
The delusions.
I don't mind making a fool of myself over you, Marcus. Nope, not at all.
And the Super PAC donations.
You can be young without money, but you can't be old without it.
With Michelle Bachmann in Cat on a Hot Tin Streetcar Named Desire.
Whoever you are, I've always depended on the kindness of strangers. You're not with the Muslim Brotherhood, are you?
And now, two Russian men who are not gay.
I am Ivan Alexander Dmitry Petrovich.
And I am Dmitry Petrovsky Ivanovich Alexandrov.
And we wish to congratulate our country for successful non-gay Olympics.
Russia took much criticism for outlawing the talking about the gay, but it is important.
Like most other people who are not gay, Dmitry and I are all the time thinking what gay people do and how they kiss and what it is all the time feeling like to do gay things.
How rough man's face is and what they put in their hands and what they say.
And how they take off pants or take each other's pants or give massage.
Or is it light massage or hard massage?
Or whether there is candles and romance or whether it is rough sex.
Very rough sex.
Oh, you will know you've done something.
Or maybe it starts gentle and turns rough. I hear gay people do this.
They are of anything capable. I hear they have a word they can say, a code word, a safe word when things get too rough.
Which word?
Can be any word. It can be zebra or giraffe.
No, I don't like those. I would not remember.
So we just want to congratulate Mother Russia for taking stand and having Olympics with no gay.
And also our congratulations to all the athletes. Whether you won gold medal or not, we very much admired watching you in Olympics.
Especially weightlifters.
Oh, yes, weightlifters. Most of all.
America's favorite stoners are back with the sequel to their hit movie, Up in Medical Smoke. Get ready to fire up the new Cheech and Chong joint, Up in Legal Smoke.
Hey, man, you heard about Obama?
Joe Bama?
Nah, not Joe Bama, man. Obama!
Joe Bama worked at the Fillmore, man.
Yeah, well, Obama's the president of the United States, man.
Come on, man. The president of the United States is Lyndon Johnson.
Obama! You know, Obama. He just came out and said that weed isn't that dangerous.
Okay. This is definitely the guy that worked at the Fillmore.
He said weed is no more dangerous than alcohol.
What do you mean, alcohol? Rubbing alcohol?
Nah, not rubbing alcohol. Wine, beer, spirits.
How can spirits be alcohol, man? You mean like Casper?
Nah, not Casper, man.
What about those older teen ghosts that chased him around, man? No,
look, forget about the teen ghosts, okay, man? I don't care about those ghosts.
Me neither. Those ghosts were fucked, man.
Anyway, Obama said that weed is just a bad habit or a vice.
Miami Vice?
No, not Miami Vice, man. A vice. Something that's not good for you.
Miami Vice isn't good for you, man. Unless you're Don Corleone.
Don Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson, man.
Look, man, I'm trying to tell you. Not only is weed legal in two states, the president says it's not that bad. Doesn't that, like, blow whatever's left of your mind, man?
Weed is legal, and President Johnson says it's not that bad? Whoa. I'm gonna start drinking rubbing alcohol mixed with Casper, man.
Up in Legal Smoke, now playing with the Lego Movie.
Stand by for a friendly message from the company.
Now that we've merged with Comcast, Time Warner, Apple Computers, Microsoft, Piggly Wiggly, Pottery Barn, and Laura Scudder's, the company is the only phone call you need to make. Just reach out to our helpful phone mail system at 888-888-8888. It's your one-stop shopping source for everything. So whether it's internet service, iceberg lettuce, or psychiatric care, you'll always end up with the company. And what's so wrong with that? The company. We're the only phone call there is.
The Final Edition is pleased to present this special message.
Hi, I'm a typical suburban dad.
And I'm his typical suburban wife.
Hey, honey, do you hear the winds of change blowing?
Sure do, honey. Why don't you tell them what's happening to the nuclear family?
Yes, dear. The average nuclear family now consists of two children, a pet, and a semi-automatic weapon.
Our family is better than average. We have 3 children and 2 semi-automatic weapons.
Oh, honey, you know we have 2 children now.
Oh, that's right, dear. One of them shot the other one.
We call it family fire.
It's what happens when you leave your guns out. It's our Second Amendment right.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the state, the right of the people to leave their guns out shall not be infringed.
You'll have to pry our kids' guns from their cold, dead fingers.
Which we've done.
You know, honey, losing a child is a small price to pay for keeping and bearing arms.
You said it, dear. After all, we can always get more kids.
Guess we're gonna have to start right now.
Fortunately, there's a brand new organization for parents who leave their guns out where their kids can get them.
The PTNRA.
The Parent Teacher National Rifle Association.
The PTNRA makes sure no law will ever come between your child and your gun.
Thank God. Hey, Junior, what you got there? isn't that cute, honey? Honey? Honey?
The PTNRA. Because guns don't kill, very small people whose parents have guns do.
Honey? Honey? Okay, we can fix this in post.
Welcome to the World Room at Columbia University. The votes are counted, and here, finally, are the Pulitzer Prizes of 2014. Let's see. First of all, the Pulitzer Prize for Best BuzzFeed Quiz goes to Which Family Guy Episode Are You? No surprises there, I think. They actually included every Family Guy episode. They really refined the metric. Took 2 hours to take the quiz. Next, the Pulitzer Prize for Best GIF on Reddit. We had a lot of contenders on this one. Kitten chasing a dreidel, kitten doing a double take at a lemur, dog typing, and kitten calling grandma, but the winner has to be kitten sliding neatly between fence posts. I know, it was quite a contest, and we'll have plenty of time for unpleasant arguments on our webpage. Speaking of which, best unpleasant argument on a webpage. The winner, you'll all be pleased to know, is a 9,000 comment thread on 4chan.org about Firefly, a TV show that was only on the air for 3 months in 2002. I agree, and well-deserved. Next, a new category, the Pulitzer Prize for the best story that was broken too soon and turned out to be false but got a lot of web hits. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a 27-way tie. 28. 28? Oh, okay. A 28-way tie that...
They still may be counting.
Okay. Actually, they're still counting. So we'll get back to you on that one. Let's just move on to the last Pulitzer Prize, the one you've all been waiting for, the Michelle Malkin Award for leaving out crucial information from an inflammatory op-ed. And the winner this year of the Michelle Malkin Award for leaving out crucial information from an inflammatory op-ed is, once again, Michelle Malkin. I know, every year this is my favorite part. All right, folks, we've all got to blog this, so let's do it quickly and we can head down to the bar.
It's 29 now.
Okay, 29-way tie on the false headlines. New fact about Barack Obama, number 42. Though he is not responsible for the botched response to Hurricane Katrina, which came before his term, Obama did cause the deadly flu epidemic of 1918. But, to be fair, he did also write Beowulf.
We'll be right back after this with the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour, a more perfect onion.
New fact about Barack Obama, number 146. Obamacare does not have death panels deciding who lives or dies. It merely has a program that gives people superpowers. You've just never heard of it because you're white. The Final Edition now presents an interview with TV writer Jim Earle about his podcast, 30 Minutes of Crap, which he performs twice monthly with his former writing partner at The Daily Show, Steve Rosenfield. Jim, I know you have a lot of interesting show business credits and a lot of stories about The Daily Show, but I wanted to focus on the podcast, which takes on some of the top current events of the day. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
No, thank you, Barry, for having me on. Sure, and, sure. Of course, yeah. Well, you know, Steve and I have been doing the podcast, 30 mm-hmm. Minutes of Crap, for a couple of months now, and we've only had about three or four editions. So
yeah, right. So.
Hey, you know, before I go on, can I tell everybody where I'm going to be appearing in next week?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh,
yeah,
sure,
this
sure.
won't take long. Yeah. I'll be at Shenanigans Tuesday, Gee Willikers on Wednesday, Holy Cows on Thursday, yeah. Zoinks on Friday, Jeepers on Saturday, Jumpin' Jehoshaphats on Sunday, and back at Cramming Up Your Asses on Monday.
Okay.
All week I'll be at Farter's Laugh Oven the next week in Stockton, except for Thursday when I'll be at the Laugh Ginch with a Friday one-nighter at Gaber's Ass Flume in Lodi. Uh-oh. Raffle afterwards.
Okay.
Then I'll be at Snickers Snark Shack in Van Nuys, Carver's Laugh Culvert in Culver City, Latifah's Def Jam and Race Comedy Riot in Compton, yeah. and Shit in Shitsville just off the 134.
Sure. Okay.
Then I'll be at Hitler's Laugh Oven in Pittsburgh, Toronto's Ha Ha Hogan in Tempe, Hogan's Tempe Tonto and Ha Ha, Tempe's Hogan Ha Ha and Tonto, Ha Ha's Tonto Tempe and Hogan, yeah. Shem's Palace of Gluten in Berkeley, Dr. Brown's Abortion on Demand Chuckle Cave and Incest Emporium, and I'm holding Michael Jackson's Penis Comedy Magic Club in Brentwood.
Yeah. So when you
week after that, I'll be gigging at Mom and Dad Are Disappointed in Me in My Mind,
okay.
Florida.
Okay.
Ball Slaps in Bend, Oregon. Vagina's Oyster Hut in Eureka. That's sure. a great place.
Oh, yeah.
And they just shot the president in Dallas.
Hmm.
So that's a good week, good 3 weeks.
Well, that's ago. So you're still out there working as a comedian. That's
the week after that, I'll be appearing at Bonkers Hurt Cellar, Insaney's Ass Attic, Looney's Torture Loft, mm-hmm. and Peanuts' Pecan Hutch, all at the Saugus Ramada Inn.
Yeah. Okay.
Then I might at Farter's Fuck Stop in Fayetteville,
oh.
Dr. Mengele's Joke Lab, Skinny's Colon Hut and Crap Haven.
Oh, that's still where I am.
Yeah. Followed by Fatty's Dump Factory in Fairfax, mm-hmm. Buster's Butt Your Gut Butt Bong and Tattoo. Tattoo Shoppy in Baldwinsville, and Flipper's right. Jerk Sock Emporium in Snatch Bend, Illinois.
Oh, I remember that place. Yeah. So when you first started the podcast...
The week after that, I'll be at Remembrance of Things Laughed.
Oh.
The Grapes of Laugh, The Telltale Har Har Heart, Mirth of a Nation's, Don Kijoki's,
okay.
The Scarlet Laughter,
mm-hmm.
The Brothers Laugh Your Ass Off,
yeah.
The Great Laughsbees.
Sure.
Laughter in the Rye,
yeah.
Slaughterhouse Tight Five,
okay.
The Postman Always Zings Twice,
yeah.
The Magnificent Laughtersons,
okay.
Battlefield Mirth,
yeah.
All's Hilarious on the Western Front, mm. 50 Shades of What the Hey, King Solomon's Lines, and Uncle Tom's Laughing,
hmm. okay.
and A Journey to the Center of the Mirth.
Okay.
Oh, and 20,000 Leagues Under the Glee. That's a funny place.
Yeah.
It's only been open a week.
Really? Huh. So you're really having a
month after that. I'm at Larry's Laugh Laundromat in Squid Hatchery in Salinas.
Sure.
The Laugh Out Lounge. Oh my God! It's rolling on the floor, laughing my asses off. Emoticon smiley face and Boner Hut Lap Dance Circus and Huffer Hut.
Mm-hmm.
Barney's Burford Barn, Floater and Sinker's Flush Funtorium in Fontana.
Mm-hmm.
Put Your Hands Together and Gary's Guffaw Garage. What's That Running Down Your Legs? Dr. Mengele's Comedy Clinic. Flipper's Funtopia and Thalidomide Dispensary,
mm-hmm.
Belly Laughs,
yeah.
Bananas Boner Basement, and I'm not even trying anymore, it's Giggletorium and Scab Drop-Off Center. Oh, and a week after that, I'm at the Triangle Fun Waste Factory.
Okay. Well, I'd hope to talk a little bit more about the podcast, but we are out of time.
That's a drag.
Any credits? Where are you going to be next?
Oh, well, I'll be at Larry's Laugh Laundromat in Squid Hatchery in Salinas. It's kind of like a 6-month run.
Oh, okay.
So, here, I'll start at the very beginning.
Okay,
again.
All right.
The following message is brought to you by the Republican effort to totally revamp ourselves in 2014, or Retro 2014.
I am black.
I am gay.
And I am Latino.
We're the new Republicans.
Hey, my black friend. You are African American all the time. Tell the people why you are Republican, why don't you?
Glad to, my same-sex friend.
I am a smaller government guy, who is also a black guy.
And I am a part of a growing group of Spanish-type people.
We're the New Republicans!
As a Latino man, I'm not going to deport myself.
I no longer wish to deport you, only to discriminate against you in more socially acceptable ways.
As do I, my fellow minorities. I am gay, but I feel gay marriage should be between a man and a woman.
We're the New Republicans!
I think evolution might be true.
I think facts might be true.
Global warming is still not true.
We're the New Republicans!
As a black man, I no longer believe in not helping black people.
I am gay. I am here. Get used to it.
I speako Spanish.
Now America has a real choice.
It's like the choice between Oreos and Hydrox.
Vegas and Atlantic City.
Type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes.
We're the New Republicans.
Are we off?
Oh, that was pretty good.
I'm going to be the gay guy next time.
Stand by for a friendly message from the company!
Here are the movies playing at your local cinema. At the Roxy Theater on Vermont Street, it's the second sequel to the third spin-off of Spider-Man. At the Skylight Theater on West Broadway, it's the third sequel to the second spin-off of Spider-Man. And over at the Filmplex on Madison Street, it's the long-awaited fourth spin-off of Spider-Man. Remember, you've gotta like a movie spiked with references to other movies you already like.
The Final Edition Radio Hour now takes you to a press conference by the mayor of East Perazzo, Massachusetts.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for coming. I will read a brief statement. I will not be taking questions. As you know, our local paper, the East Perazzo Sentinel, ran an expose reporting that I spent nearly $100,000 from the city's discretionary budget on internet pornography. This included videos of obese women having an Easter egg hunt, a sexy female Hitler yelling in what I presume is Portuguese, and a woman slapping a dog. That last video may not have been intended as pornography, but can be regarded as such, given the context. As much as I would like to deny these allegations, the evidence is abundant and it is damning. These revelations have been a great source of pain to my family and have made the business of governance well nigh impossible. So, after spending these last few troubled days examining what matters to me the most, I have decided to forsake public office as mayor and to forsake my family for the porn. Please, let me finish. I entered politics inspired by leaders such as Martin Luther King, whose vision is now part of the very fabric of justice. I began a family inspired by my grandparents, who raised 4 sons and 3 daughters and lived to see them all thrive in this new adopted country. I was inspired to look at porn after seeing a doctored photo of Florence Henderson doing something that need not be recounted here. And what must be admitted is that no matter how precious my family values, no matter how passionate my beliefs in the founding principles of this country, filthy pictures are a bigger part of my actual day-to-day life than anything John Adams or Thomas Jefferson ever did. Despite extensive legal training, I have never successfully masturbated to the Fourth Amendment, and I have tried. So if I am forced to choose between my higher aspirations for society, my deep concern for my family, and videos of women asphyxiating each other with cake, I am going to have to go with the cake. For although at times I may despair of our nation, and occasionally I bend from the responsibilities of family and home, I will literally never get tired of strangle porn. I know that my family is very upset with my decision, but I believe that with enough time and enough porn, I will be able to block that out. And although I feel the disappointment of voters in this city, I do not feel it as keenly, nor think about it as often, as the stuff going on right now on YouPorn's amateur page. I can only imagine what I am missing even at this moment, and frankly, I am anxious to get back to it. I thank you all.
New fact about Barack Obama number 3007. Barack Obama does not hate white people because he's black, but he does hate fat people because he's thin.
With luck, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour, a more perfect onion.
New fact about Barack Obama number 10,014. President Obama is not atheistic, but is actually autistic. And he became autistic because he was vaccinated.
And now a special final edition conversation with Jeff and Tony and Larry Gitlin, author of Conversations with Carlin, an in-depth discussion with George Carlin about life, sex, death, drugs, comedy, words, and so much more. You can find it on Amazon, and Larry joins us here in studio today. One of the things that I've learned about comedy is that brevity is the soul of wit, so you should retitle the name of that book.
Well, brevity may be the soul of wit, but it's not the soul of book selling. So subtitles have gotten very long, and so, yeah, keep it up with the trend, I guess.
This is very true. So, Larry, I'll start with you. And by the way, for those of you listening, we're just going to talk Carlin. And if you don't know Carlin, it's a shame, but hopefully you'll learn a little bit about him tonight. I'm not an expert by any stretch. He's been one of the few comedy people I look up to. But your book is about a conversation that you had with Carlin, Was it one sit-down? Was it supposed to be an interview for a particular project?
It was an interview for Esquire magazine in 2001 for their What I've Learned column. And I got to speak to George. It was actually three separate interviews that totaled 5 hours. And what's great about it is that particular column, they give you leeway to talk about everything, like some personal and the big life issues and war and death and really deep level of topics. So George, I came up with like 20 pages of questions about everything I could possibly think of about his life and his attitudes on the world in general, and he answered every single one of them in the most thoughtful way that you can imagine. I mean, I have not had an interview like that where, no matter what I threw at the person, they were just so thorough and so reasoned and so intelligent and so warm, and it was a phenomenal, phenomenal experience.
How long, with 20 pages of questions, how long was the talk?
Well, it was about 5 hours total.
Okay. I'm sure you get this question all the time by your book. Any answer or some moment that was particularly surprising or really sticks out with you?
You know, at this point, I mean, I've read over it so many times,
right,
that, I think there was an overall sense that was more surprising to me, is that, you know, if you're a fan of George's, you see how funny he is, you can see how intelligent his material is, but you don't really get a glance at how smart he is until you're able to sit with him, or until you've seen or read a conversation, because it really goes so far beyond he's not just a rebel, and a lot of times that comes through. This is a man who has really, really thought through everything he's saying in depth, in more depth than you can imagine. And so I think the most exciting part of the whole thing was just, no matter what I asked him, there was an answer that had been thought out over the course of what was clearly long and a long life that was thirsty for knowledge.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think I have to say, when I first sort of came back to George, I knew George from the 60s when we were both sort of comedians on the Mo Griffin Show and struggling around Bleecker Street, you know, picking up gigs and stuff, doing all that stuff, the Llewellyn Davis stuff, you know. but we hadn't really had much contact for about 20 years, and I was doing this book called Going Too Far, which was basically a history of what my editor made me call boomer humor, but the explosion of satire that took place in the 60s and 70s.
That shows what editors know. But go on.
Exactly. I hadn't spoken to George, since he was doing The Indian Sergeant. And most of the people that I interviewed, Jules Pfeiffer and people like that who were sort of major, or Paul Sills, I mean, those kind of people. I did maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours, interview with him. And I got started talking to George And the conversations were just so complex and so, as you say, that it wasn't just that they'd been sort of well thought out, but they were thoughtful. I mean, he didn't struggle with questions, but he certainly answered them at a depth that no one else had.
I describe myself as lonely. I'm lonely for people like me, and I don't find a lot of them. You're a kindred spirit. It's amazing how, first of all, how many minor and somewhat major parallels we have mm-hmm. in our lives and experiences, and as it turns out, values and attitudes as well. In spite of this theology I've worked out for myself, which is that I'm greater than, lesser than, and equal to the universe for the three reasons I gave. You know, I'm greater than it because I can contain it in my mind, and lesser than it because that's obvious, schmuck. And I'm equal to it because I'm of the same atom as it is. And I always say that what that does for me is connect me to everything and make me a part of it. I earnestly believe that it is all one spirit, all one energy, all one beat, and there are just these different manifestations of it. Because of that, I feel very safe in the universe. I feel very comfortable and very at home because it is only me. And hey, it's only me. Remember that? Hey, it's okay. It's only me. Well, that's what the universe says to me. Nothing this shit can scare me because, hey, oh, it's only me. No fucking problem. In spite of that, I still feel lonely.
God's lonely.
There's only everything. And it's a wonder we have loneliness, because we're only everything. This is nothing else.
That's right. Now, are you actually claiming to be God? Or
no,
are you saying,
no, not at all.
You're saying, no, you're lesser than God, you're greater than God.
Yeah.
Because God's just an idea. You're a monotheistic comedian?
The mono part, yes, but the theistic, I don't accept.
Okay.
It's
there's nothing outside of you that is an intelligence that is responsible for you in some way.
Not that I can glean, and the degree of intelligence would immediately come into question if I were to attribute that.
Now, when was this?
This would have been 1984 or no, 5 or 6.
Really? See, that's fascinating, because that is a period where George did not seem to be happy with where he was comedically at that time. Did you get that sense from him then?
Well, no, and I think, I mean, so this is sort of privileged knowledge at this point, but I mean, looking back, I don't think he was particularly unhappy. I think he was exploring a lot of different things, but he was definitely, you know, on the upswing of his final act, if you will, the great sort of legendary George Carlin was yet to emerge. But
so the germ of that great 90s material was already churning.
Yeah, well, I mean, as he said in Last Words, it was in the 80s, I think, in part because of Reagan's ascent to the emperorship or whatever it was. He decided to start educating himself, and you know, and reading a great deal, and Village Voice cover to cover, and the Coburns and all those kind of people, and so he was sort of in the middle of that process, and I think this was when he really started to answer questions instead of a pat way. He answered them honestly and you know, with the benefit of this sort of new learning that he was picking up. And that when we actually started doing Last Words about 5 or 6 years after that, it was even more so. I mean, he had definitely sort of expanded his intellectual range, and I mean, I'm no snob, but I mean, it just staggered me that someone who dropped out of ninth grade, you know, would be quoting philosophers and psychiatrists and deconstructionists, thank God, but pretty much, you know, the sort of top of the creme de la creme of intellectual thought, and absorbing it and making it his own.
It's a good example of the difference between natural intelligence and education, which is, you know, implanted. You know, George was definitely the type who was He was primed to learn on his own.
Absolutely.
You know, when you hear stories like the one about his grandfather, you know, his grandfather was a policeman, and he would write the Shakespeare's plays out in longhand just for fun. And this was the environment he grew up in, so it's fascinating to see how that affected him, and it really it set the stage for everything that came after.
Absolutely. I mean, he was an autodidact par excellence. But and it's interesting.
Just a moment ago, you said you weren't a snob, and yet you just said autodidact.
Sorry. Autodidact is someone who learns how to drive a car.
Before, I know you both have tons to say on the subject, but one question that I've sort of had is from a very uninformed perspective, but knowing what I do know, it seems that Carlin went from a great entertainer to someone who wanted to say something. And I think part of that legacy for the rest of the comedians and satirists that have come since is I've looked at his stage of saying something and taken that as the starting point. Like, when I came into comedy, I wanted to say something and use comedy as the medium for the message. And I think there are more people that are maybe trying to do that. And Carlin sort of was on the vanguard of comedy just being for entertainment. To say, so obviously there were other people. There were the Smothers Brothers. There was Mark Twain and Lenny Bruce, and people did it otherwise. But he was, it seemed to be, the most sort of mainstream, big name, successful comedian that then also really had a message. Now, I have a question for you guys and different experiences: is what I saw and its impact on the future of comedy true? And is that sort of a fair assessment of?
I think it is. And, you know, George always talked about Jammin' in New York, the 1992 special. That was the one that is his favorite. That and he heard from a lot of comedians that Jammin' in New York changed everything for comedians. I watched it this weekend again. I went back, and I was astounded by how that special blends everything that George was ever great at into one concise hour. His political intelligence, the deconstruction of both domestic and domestic politics and international politics, but also the physicality in the lighter sections. He was still making the same kind of faces, doing the same kind of voices. Every single thing George ever did great is in that special. And that's why I asked about the 80s, because it does seem like the 80s was just time to realize it needed to be brought together on some level and then do that. And by the time he hit 92, it was just so powerful. And I think, to your point, Jeff, the first time that I've really seen this blending of strong political statement without ever losing the funny. It was there the whole time, along with the political passion. And that's just incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have rockets and penises in the Gulf. You have golf courses for the homeless. But above all, you have The Planet is Fine, which is just like one of the most extraordinary pieces he ever did. And as an essay about so many things. It's not just about the environment. I mean, it's about the self-image of the species. I mean, it's like
all of
it's
our obsessions.
Such a smart piece. Right. Wasn't it?
It's about all of our obsessions and minutia and everything we deal with.
In last words, he explained that he made a huge discovery when he started doing that piece, and especially in Jammin' New York, because there were 6,000 screaming New Yorkers in that theater. And he said, it doesn't matter sometimes if they don't laugh. And that's very true. They're not laughing; they're just listening. But when the laughs come, boy, they're so satisfying. You know, you think a little bit of plastic is going to make a difference. I mean, it's just such a great line.
Well, it's always been. I think it's the one of the fine arts that a lot of younger comedians, even more savage comedians, you have to sort of let them know that you're funny, so that they trust that at the end of what you have to say is going to be a payoff for that sort of visceral animal need they have to laugh. And then if they trust you, they will listen to what you're saying, and then they will put aside. Like, it's always Will Durst, who is sort of a contemporary great political comic. He told me once at the start, get funny and then try to get political. I, of course, ignored that. That's why we're doing this show right now.
The planet is fine. The people are fucked. The people are fucked. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. The planet has been here for 4.5 billion years, all right? 4.5 billion. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe. 200,000? Maybe. And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat, that somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just floating around the sun? Planet has been through a lot worse than us for a long time. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, bombardments for hundreds of thousands of years by comets and asteroids and meteors, sandstorms, erosion of all kinds, cosmic radiation, worldwide fires, worldwide floods, recurring ice ages. And we think some aluminum cans and some plastic bags are going to make a difference? Planet isn't going anywhere. We are. We're going away. We're going away. Pack your shit, folks. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace either. Thank God for that. Maybe a little styrofoam. Maybe a little styrofoam. Planet will be here and we'll be long gone. Just another failed mutation. Just another closed-end biological mistake. An evolutionary cul-de-sac. Planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. A surface nuisance. You want to know how the planet's doing? Ask those people in Pompeii who are frozen into position from volcanic ash. How the planet's doing. Well, if the planet's all right, ask the people in Mexico City or Armenia or 100 other places buried under thousands of tons of earthquake rubble if they feel like a real threat to the planet this week. How about the people in Kilauea, Hawaii, who build their homes right next to an active volcano and then wonder why they have lava in the living room? Planet is going to be here a long, long, long time after we're gone, and it will heal itself, it will cleanse itself, because that's what it does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and the water will recover, the earth will be renewed. And say, if it's true that plastic doesn't degrade, well, the planet will simply incorporate plastic into a new paradigm, the Earth plus plastic. The planet doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the Earth. The Earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the Earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old philosophical question, why are we here? Plastic. Assholes. So, the plastic is here. Our job is done. We can be phased out now. And I think that's really started already, don't you? I mean, to be fair, the planet probably sees us as a mild threat, something to be dealt with. And I'm sure the planet will defend itself in the manner of a large organism, like a beehive or an ant colony can muster a defense. I'm sure the planet will think of something. What would you do if you were the planet trying to defend against this pesky, troublesome species? Let's see. What might... viruses. Viruses might be good. They seem vulnerable to viruses. And viruses are tricky, always mutating and forming new strains whenever a vaccine is developed. Perhaps this first virus could be one that compromises the immune system of these creatures. Perhaps a human immunodeficiency virus, making them vulnerable to all sorts of other diseases and infections that might come along. And maybe it could be spread sexually, making them a little reluctant to engage in the act of reproduction. Well, that's a poetic note. And it's a start. And I can dream, can I? I don't worry about the little things. Bees, trees, whales, snails. I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. You know what I call it? The big electron. The big electron. Whoa. 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 It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't even judge. It just is. And so are we, for a little while. Thanks for being here with me for a little while tonight.
We'll be right back after this with the Final Edition Radio Hour. Welcome back to the conclusion of the Final Edition Radio Hour, A More Perfect Onion. It looks like we might make it after all.
New fact about Barack Obama number 207,403.
Although President Obama does not want to outlaw all your guns, he does want to outlaw all your knives and spoons.
Stand by for a friendly message from the company!
Every day, many people thank us for stopping them from downloading free movies and music. Many, many people. And we have received many requests to step up our efforts and protect our royalties and intellectual property rights even more vigorously. So, we're bowing to popular opinion and arresting even more of you. You're welcome. And as a bonus, please enjoy the soothing buzz of our surveillance helicopters.
Mr. Alfonso Cuarón, welcome to Warners. I'm Marcus Pilkington, the new head of production. And Alfonso, I want you to pitch the hell out of me.
So, I would like to make a $100 million movie about falling.
Falling? Falling in love? Falling in love again?
No.
No? Falling out of love?
No. Just falling. Spinning, falling, helpless, spinning, ass over tetes, over, over, out of control, spinning, falling.
Okay, so who is doing the falling?
A beautiful woman.
Ah, okay, okay. You mean falling sexually, a fallen angel?
No.
No?
No. Just her, helpless, spinning. Falling, far, far away than falling, very, very near, ass over tetes, tetes over ass, spinning, falling, 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 falling.
Right, right, so it's a beautiful woman falling and spinning for 80 to 90 minutes, and the budget's $100 million?
Yes!
So, a woman falling and spinning from nowhere to nowhere?
No, 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 no. She falls to Earth.
Aha! She's an alien.
No, no. Human. She's falling from... Or...
An auto?
No, up in the sky. Or...
Or flee higher?
Higher, much.
In space?
You got it.
Oh, okay. Orion.
No. This is not how she fall from Orion. It's 1,500 light years away. She'd be dust.
The Oort cloud?
Orbit.
She's an astronaut.
Yes.
Okay, so are there other astronauts?
Yes, four. Two dead.
Who killed them?
Russian garbage.
Good. I like that. Bad guys, good. Leaving one...
Very handsome guy.
Ah. Do they fuck?
No sex.
They gotta fuck, Alfonso. I want to see sex in space. Falling, spinning, over and over.
No sex. Just falling and spinning ass over death.
Okay. Is the very handsome guy falling and spinning too?
No. He floats away.
Ah.
To save her.
From what?
From himself. It's beautiful.
Alfonso, I'm not hearing a lot of plot.
Yes! It's beautiful. Simple plot. He sacrifices for her.
By floating away.
Floating away, away, into blackest space.
Okay. One detail here. How come he floats away, but she falls and spins?
Because I like to see the beautiful woman falling and spinning ass over.
Okay. But scientifically, why would one float and the other fall and spin?
I don't know nothing about the physics.
You have a title for this?
Gravity.
Gravity. Good. One word. Easy to remember. Has a lot of gravitas, gravity. And she's falling because of gravity.
You're very smart, you know that?
When she hits Earth, does she die?
No. She's in the middle thing.
So, a happy ending.
Not for the other guy. He's halfway to Orion.
Okay, Alfonso. Look, bottom line, we've got no sex, no romance, no plot, and a $100 million tab. Give me a one-sentence pitch to sell the Money Monkeys on gravity.
The whole world cannot get enough of a beautiful woman falling and spinning, ass over tetes, helpless through space, ass, tetes, tetes, ass, over and over, spinning, falling, coming towards us, going away, spinning, over and over, tetes, ass.
And now Jim Earle reads his poem, I Am the Ideal Candidate for This Job.
I am the ideal candidate for this job because I am able to maintain the young Hollywood voice to write scripts for a variety of entertainment platforms. I am the ideal candidate because I am able to swallow all the pain this job will cause and rebirth it years later as a giant ball of cancer. I am the ideal candidate because I'm a team player with a positive can-do attitude and I'm willing to turn against my friends and loved ones. I'm the ideal candidate because I can start yesterday and be off the page and in your face 26/7. I'm the ideal candidate because my use of alcohol and heroin challenged dominant media narratives in a new millennial 3D media ecosystem. I'm the ideal candidate because I am a seemingly ordinary man who is currently challenging dominant media narratives within a new millennial 3D media ecosystem of shit.
Jim Earle is currently unemployed.
New fact about Barack Obama, number 6,174,302. Barack Obama wants to pay people to smoke opium and watch Wheel of Fortune. However, he is not Muslim.
This has been another Final Edition Radio Hour. To get your fill of more satire with teeth, visit thefinaledition.com every single day. Today's show was performed by Kevin Janis, Barry Link, Darby Worley, Jim Earle, Anne Tuchel, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, Jen Dodd, Andrew Hammond, Rachel Rauch, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Written by Barry Link, John Marshall, Jim Earle, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Music for The Company, Pulitzer Prizes, and I Am the Ideal Candidate were by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. George Carlin appeared as himself. Edited by Greg Russ, Andrew Hammond, and Barry Lank. Produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2014.